It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
All right, good afternoon from beautiful Savannah, Georgia. Scott Luton here with you live on Supply Chain Now Radio. Welcome to the show. We are not broadcasting from Atlanta as often as we do. We love our supply chain city, but today we are broadcasting once again from the beautiful city of Savannah, Georgia, specifically the Savannah Technical College Crossroads campus. And we are continuing our Savannah Business Leadership Series, which is co-hosted with my good friend Bill Stankiewicz, who's here with me. We'll welcome him aboard in just a second. So Savannah Technical College does an outstanding job building a talent pipeline for all of the industry growth we're seeing in Savannah and beyond. It's part of the Technical College System of Georgia, and it's really a secret weapon for not only expanding industry that's here, but also pulling additional industry investments into the state. Looking forward to today's finale. We've had a trio of shows here in Savannah today, full day for sure. Friendly reminder, you can find our Supply Chain Now replays on a variety of channels, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and, of course, our great partners over at Business Radio X. As always, we'd love to have you subscribe so you don't miss anything. So let's say hello to my esteemed co-host, Bill Stankiewicz. Good afternoon. How you doing, Bill?
Good afternoon, Scott.
So Bill serves on a wide variety of boards, including as Vice President of Finance with Apex Savannah. He is a supply chain guru and consultant, the Savannah Supply Chain Guy. So glad to have you here for our third show today, Bill.
Thank you, Scott. And I'm really happy that we got one of the top executives from Georgia Port Authority. They'll be joining us shortly.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and say hello to our featured guest before we dive into some of the top things to know in supply chain now. So today's featured guest is Stacy Watson, Director of Economic and Industrial Development with the world-class Georgia Ports Authority. How you doing, Stacy?
I'm great. Good afternoon. How is everybody?
We're doing great. Thanks for carving time out.
My pleasure.
Y'all do such a great job moving stuff, making stuff happen in this state and in this region, and we're always featured. I always enjoy putting a spotlight on some of the things y'all are doing.
Great. We try.
We love Georgia Port Authority, GPA. Hello, Griff.
Georgia Ports loves you too, Bill.
We're going to get along just fine. All right. Well, some more from Stacy in just a moment. But, Bill, we want to dive into, we're going to be touching on cold chain. Right?
Cold chain.
It's a growing aspect.
It's kind of cold in this conference room here, too. Turn that air down.
We'll put some more lights on here. But we're going to be touching on cold chain more. And you've got some news as we dive into some of the top things known in supply chain now from the food industry. Tell us more.
Yes. From our good friends at Food Engineering, we have some updates on plant openings and expansions. I won't bore you with all the new growth that is happening here in our beautiful Savannah, Georgia. As you know, Americold recently had purchased Port Fresh Logistics on January 31st, and they have future plans after we've been meeting with their teams for additional cold chain expansion here. In addition, Baldor Specialties Foods is opening up a 100,000 square foot facility in Hunts Point, New York. Greenlife
cold chain.
Yes, Greenlife Farms is actually going to be doing construction of hydroponic greenhouse in Boynton Beach, Florida. Also, Windchill Cold Storage had a ribbon coven ceremony recently. It's a 330,000 square foot facility and built by Tittman, and that's in Sioux City, South Dakota. And ConAgra Brands has invested $78 million in a 350,000 square foot facility that's going to be in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. So a lot of good things going on with the cold chain. As you probably know, many consumers want to have food produce all year round.
Exactly.
How do you get food produce all year round?
Exactly.
You got to be able to get these imports in from Chile, Peru, the Mediterranean, and that's where Savannah is at the apex of getting all this product in and getting it out to customers. So anytime you go into a Whole Foods, Publix, Kroger, there's fresh vegetables all the time. So that's just a simple recap, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely.
The plants and expansions going on.
You know, speaking of cold chain, a few months back, we did a segment on Valentine's Day, right? And the Valentine's Day supply chain. Because I didn't really realize just how quickly from the time you cut these flowers overseas to get them in to where they're still fresh and, you know, the types of flowers your beloved other wants to see and receive.
Plus chocolate.
Yeah. So it's really how fast things move and how fast things have to move to meet these consumer demands is just fascinating. One fascinating component of the modern-day supply chain. So thanks for tackling some of the top things known in supply chain now, Bill, and great to have you as a co-host for our third show today. Setting records. All right, so let's reintroduce our featured guest today here on Supply Chain Now Radio. Again, Stacy Watson, Director, Economic and Industrial Development at the Georgia Ports Authority. Good afternoon again, Stacy.
Hey.
So before we dive into your organization, tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and your professional journey.
Well, thanks for having me, Scott. You said it's the third. Is it the final episode?
Third and final today.
You saved the best for last on a Friday afternoon.
There you go.
No, I've been with the Georgia Ports Authority for going on 27 years now.
Wow. Congratulations.
More than half my life. Yeah, time
flies.
And thank
you for your service, to our country.
Yeah, 30 years in the Georgia Air National Guard and retiring at the end of this year. I've been in this area for a long time. I actually started, I'm from Dodge County, Middle Georgia. Actually started my career at the Georgia Ports Authority as an intern in the summer of 1992. Does not sound that, you know, like it was that long ago, but that was a long time ago.
It really does.
No, and majored in logistics, intermodal transportation at Georgia Southern. I think I may have been the second class to go through. And, having a military background, being from the Middle Georgia area, you know, I wanted to work in logistics. You know, I wanted to work at Robbins Air Force Base like every other, you know, person in that area does. But 1992, Robbins was on the BRAC list.
Right.
You know,
and
joint,
that's the
base realignment and closures. Yeah, that was the first round of BRAC. And, you know, I was like, I don't want to go there if they're going to close the base. Mm. So I talked with one of my professors, never forget him, Cam Williams, Georgia Southern University. And he says, Stacy, I know you'll do a great job. What I can do for you is get you an internship at the Georgia Ports. Mm. If you do a good job, it'll turn into a full-time opportunity. I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. And me, like most people, I think in Georgia, especially at that time, had no idea. You know, I'd heard about it. I probably took a tour of the facility, you know, probably a year earlier, didn't think twice about it. But you know, I took an internship in what's now ship operations, and I was started in June, was hired in August, and graduated in September. So,
wow.
So,
congrats.
You know, and I'm still at the same two places that I've actually started my careers. I've had the opportunity to work in several different areas of the port. I've ship operations, container operations. I've been on the administrative side in operations. I've been in the marketing department.
So you know the whole gamut.
Well, I don't know. It's changed so much, you know, since 92. When I started there, and I'm dating myself again, we had six container cranes out on the terminal.
Wow.
We were probably doing about 350,000 TEUs a year. We were a totally different operation.
Mm-hmm.
We were a wheeled operation, which means we took everything and placed them on, you know, all the containers and placed them on the chassis at night so that the customer could come in and just hook and haul.
Mm-hmm.
We went away from that type of operation as we grew. Six container cranes. Now we've got 30 on the dock.
Wow.
At full build out of the facility.
Plus more coming.
42. Exactly. We got six more on, you know, coming right now.
Yeah.
So I've been there through the growth period. I mean, if you look at our growth chart from 2000 to 2018, it's almost a perfect, you know, kind of a right angle.
Yes.
You know, it's, you know, we had a little bit of a blip there in 2008, 2009, but
like most companies,
but we recovered, you know, very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, we were one of those ports that recovered very quickly, and it's been, you know, a good ride since then.
Great team, great leadership there.
Yep. So, economic development. I'm now the director of economic development, and what that is, and I've been doing this for the past 17, 18 years. Mm. Started as the manager, went to the general manager, now director. I report directly to the chief commercial officer, which is a definite realization of the emphasis that the Georgia Ports Authority places on economic development. So I've been doing this about 16, 17 years, as I said, and I work with companies, or with prospects, as we call them, companies that are looking to build facilities within the state of Georgia. And I get involved when that project would involve import or export.
Using and building the facilities.
Building
itself.
The facilities. Yeah. So I work with, gosh, all of Georgia's 159 counties. I work with all the development authorities throughout the state. So I'm considered a statewide economic developer because I can take a project, you know, I can work a project up in Chatsworth, Georgia. I can work a project in Macon, Georgia. Yeah. I can work a project in, you know, Hall County, anywhere.
Yeah. Soup to nuts.
Yep. I could work a project in Walton County, you know, just wherever. Yeah. So what we do is we work as a team. You know, I'll work with someone from the Department of Economic Development. That team, maybe one of our utility partners with Georgia EMC, Georgia Power, even now up in Northwest Georgia with Tennessee Valley Authority, because they have a certain area of Georgia that they cover. So definite immediate impact as far as what we do.
I know Governor Kemp is well aware of your name. Mm. Holds it in high regard.
Really?
Yes, you're growing Georgia.
That's right. Great. Great, great. I've met him on a couple of occasions. Great, great guy. Great guy. So that's kind of my journey.
So if I can, so on Wednesday we were in Birmingham at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and we were really talking a lot about internships and their role.
Right.
And clearly with your story there, that internship was a key, seemed like a key bridge to breaking into an industry.
It was the bridge.
Yeah.
It was the bridge.
And
And I will tell any student out there now, you know, look for an internship. Look for an opportunity for a company, you know, it's going to sound funny, but for a company to take you for a test ride.
Right.
And for you to test ride that company as well. If it's a good fit, you stay.
Yeah.
If it's not a good fit, you've got a good bullet point on your resume.
On either, you know, so on Wednesday we had a professional that now leads the career center at the engineering college there at UAB.
Right.
And she wanted to be a veterinarian.
Yeah.
So in college she interned at a vet and then found out quickly she did not like a lot of the things they do.
Yeah.
And rather than learning that, you know, after you go through and have to you know, earn those degrees and waste all that money, she learned it where she could still shift gears and shift over to the role she wanted to be in, the career track she wanted to be in. So
exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's a learning. It's so critical that we learn, right, in what we want to do. But also, I would we want to challenge companies to give more internship opportunities, right? Because it's a two-way street.
The
there.
Georgia Ports, every summer we have 10 to 15 internships every year.
And you've done a wonderful job with the high school students.
Yes, with the YES program.
Similar to like the JCB and the Gulfstream, their internships have been very, very successful to gain long-term employees and reduce that attrition level.
Right.
Internships and co-ops, just we can't get enough of them. So
exactly.
I'm glad you shared that component of your background and how critical of a role that
it
played.
It was very critical.
So you've touched a little bit on what the Georgia Ports Authority does, but what were we missing? What else is it, maybe your average, because there's so many folks that haven't put their eyes and ears on what goes on at any of the ports. Paint a picture for us.
Well, from my standpoint, what I do, we are an economic engine for the state. I mean, yes, people know that we move freight. We move cargo. We move cargo better than any other port in the United States, better than any other port in the continental, you know, North America. But it's that economic component. We are here to empower entrepreneurs. We're here to help the total state economy grow. It's not just about our profitability. It's about the impact that we have on the farmers, the impact that we have on the, you know, convenience store workers, the warehouse distribution centers, the retailers, everyone all along that supply chain, and anyone that has anything to do with import or export. I mean, we had UGA do an economic impact analysis for us a couple of years ago. So these are not GPA numbers. Third party, based on the activity at the Georgia ports, we impact about, I think it's 450,000 jobs statewide.
Wow.
And I may be a little off on those numbers, but I've quoted them so many times right now, I'm drawing a little bit of a
it's
blank.
It's probably grown as we speak.
Huge impact to the state.
Big time.
Not just the Savannah region, but to the entire state as a whole. Heck, Atlanta. Yeah. I mean, that's our biggest draw for freight. You know,
sure.
People got to have their stuff. Atlanta's the New York of the South. You've got so many people there.
Yep.
And
urban logistics and that final mile is very challenging in this day and age of Amazon era, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So when people walk into the store, they pick something up. You got to realize that thing, that product took a journey. It didn't just automatically appear in that store. Mm. And we do the vast majority on the import side of our business on the retail side. Mm. So,
So Chris
Logan
spoke last night at the APIC Savannah event, and our audience really enjoyed that. It was standing room only. We had to bring some extra tables in.
God, yeah. You got me following Chris. Oh my God!
Well, it's been a great been a great 1-2 punch.
Heavy hitter for the end. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But
he
spoke about the unique. I think a lot of folks may think that the GPA is just another department of the state of Georgia, but it's a very unique organization, kind of geared and structured like a private entity.
It is. Yeah. We're quasi-governmental. You know, we are a part of the state. The governor is the boss, and the governor appoints our board. We've got a 13-member board from the state as a whole, statewide, and the board does what the board does. You know, they set policy. You know, they approve budgets.
Right.
But we're not employees of the state.
Right.
We're employees of the authority, which gives us a little bit a lot more flexibility in how we do business.
Yep.
You know, we're not a line item on the state budget. We're able to react quickly.
Mm.
We're able to react decisively
based
on market conditions.
Well, you know, I think as we toured the port a couple of years ago, I know Bill has probably been out there 1,000 times, but what one of the things I walked away from was, you know, if you go into a privately owned, or for that matter, many manufacturing sites, you see a lot of visual management, a lot of data, continuous improvement boards. The workforce in a well-run plant will know if it's a good day or bad day, or if it's a good week or bad week. And of course, you can tweak and further the bar, lay down the gauntlet in terms of how to improve, right, and build on those laurels.
Yeah,
very. That's what I didn't expect that when I went and toured the GPA.
Yeah.
All how they measure and how it's out in the open and just how fast y'all keep activity. It is
the trip
amazing.
Times are the best in the state for trucks going in
best
and out.
Best in the country, right?
Yeah,
best in the country. If a trucker is either dropping off or picking up a container, takes about 30 minutes. And realize that this is the largest single container terminal in North America. We're over 1,200 acres. The next biggest facility, as far as size-wise, to us is about 450 acres, and that's on the West Coast.
Ah.
So we're maintaining productivity, we're maintaining efficiency at the gate while having one single massive facility, whereas other ports, say L.A. Long Beach and that San Pedro Basin complex, they've got about 21 different container terminals. If you go to even New York, New Jersey, I believe there's 6 different container terminals there. So it's amazing. It's a one-stop shop type of model that we have.
And the sheer scope, you have to see it, and you have to get into a bus and tour, because the sheer size and scope of it is just, it's tough to describe it to our listeners. You got to get out there and see it.
Plus, it's an outstanding relationship working with the unions here.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
All right, so let's dive more into the tangibles. I really want, hopefully, after folks hear this episode today, they're going to have a really deeper appreciation of what not only goes on at the Georgia Ports Authority, but also some of the others, you know, across the country.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk exports first.
Yep, exports.
So we all probably watched Super Bowl, which, 3 months ago now? It's hard to believe. And there was one commercial that's, I think, based on feedback and talking with a lot of folks who watched it, that stood out from all the other commercials, and that is that West Point-focused story. West Point, Georgia, focused on Kia. And that new Telluride, and really the commercial was pretty neat because it kind of wove the fabric and the values and hard work and stuff. But a lot of folks don't realize there's a connection between that Super Bowl commercial and that vehicle and the Georgia Ports Authority.
Yes.
But we're gonna peel that back and share that with our listeners. So tell us more about that, Stacy.
So now we're talking about two different facilities. You know, we're the number 4 container port in the United States. But if you go down I-95 south about an hour and go into you know, Brunswick, Georgia, Colonel's Island. We've got the largest facility for automotive exports as well. Mm. Okay, we are number two as far as automotive volume, right behind Baltimore, Maryland.
Yep. For the roll-on, roll-off.
For the ro-ro cargo, the roll-on, roll-off freight. So down in Brunswick, we do about this fiscal year, we'll do about 620,000 ro-ro units, roll-on, roll-off units. And we were so proud that Kia, which is one of our top customers on the import side as well, with a company called Glovis, we're importing parts for Kia going up into West Point, Georgia. They're manufacturing for the U.S. market. So we were just seeing one-way movement, imports, manufacture for domestic consumption. Now with the Telluride, back in February, we had the big ribbon cutting for the first automobile manufactured in West Point that is exported, actually going to the Arabian Peninsula. Wow. And they're designing this big, I think it's an 8-passenger SUV, a big American-sized SUV, all over the world. So, yeah, that was a big moment for us. It's with what I do, it's important to attract, you know, a new business into the state, into the area. But when you see that company come into the state and grow and thrive and expand, in my opinion, that's an even better testament to doing business in
Wonderful.
Georgia.
And I want to say, when we broadcast last here in Savannah, Bill, I think that was early March, I think the first week of March. Yeah. I think that was right after the first Telluride had shipped.
It shipped toward the end of February.
Which is really neat, especially the timing with the Super Bowl commercial and all. So I'm sure all that was planned. But really cool to hear how what's being made right here in West Point, Georgia is being shipped to markets around the globe. All right, so shifting from Kias and Tellurides to poultry. So, you know, here in the South, we love our chicken every day of the week. And Gainesville, as we all know, the poultry capital of the world is their tagline. Let's talk about the connection between poultry and exports.
And exports, that's a good one because we are the number one in Savannah. We're back up in Savannah. We've left Brunswick. We're going up to Savannah. We are the number one container port for refrigerated exports. So more refrigerated container exports going out of our port than any other port. Mm. And what's in those containers? Chickens, frozen poultry going out all over the world, primarily to Asia, some to Russia. But all over the world, that's a huge market for us. Our export market is one of the strengths of Savannah. We have specialized equipment on the terminal just to handle refrigerated exports. We call them the reefer racks, refrigerated racks. So those containers come in. You can't mix those refrigerated containers with the dry boxes. There are two different needs there. They're two different ways that you have to handle that freight. So we've segregated parts of the terminal off just to handle the refrigerated containers. We've got this racking system so that we can plug them in so that the contents can stay cool.
You maintain the cold chain all the way
through. Maintain
the
cold chain, exactly.
Wonderful.
Exactly. And an interesting part, you know, I talked about Georgia ports being a very balanced port. The refrigerated piece is an area that we're not that balanced. So for every, you know, three that we have going out, we've got one coming in. So that was an important link to what you just read about the new companies that are coming in, because we're working to enhance the cold chain here in Savannah, and we're working with different governmental officials, different companies to maintain that cold chain. I mean, it's not just a you build it, they will come kind of aspect when it comes to cold chain. You have to have the right number of fumigators at the port. You have to arrive the right number of inspectors, government inspectors at the port.
So for food safety.
For food safety,
actually,
exactly.
Savannah is one of the first that actually granted a license to Port Fresh for fumigation for food.
So from vehicles to poultry now, I'm sure we're going to throw folks for a curveball because they're not thinking about this. So we launched our hashtag Today in Manufacturing show series on Supply Chain Now Radio last month in conjunction with the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, which has a chapter down here in Savannah. And Cayman, Jason Maxwell, VP of Operations for one of the Cayman plants, was one of our first two guests.
Right.
And he shared some things with me that I didn't even know about kaolin. I grew up in Aiken, South Carolina. So we had that still kind of along the fall line where, you know, kaolin was mined.
Right.
But tell us about, shock people with just about how much kaolin we're pushing out from Georgia.
Kaolin clay, that's good stuff. I actually grew up in middle Georgia where a lot of that stuff was mined, and they used to call it the chalk mines.
People go in
to work all clean and come back looking like they've been dusted, the old chalkboards on them. But, yeah, kaolin clay is one of our top exports. As a matter of fact, clay is actually our number three exports behind forest products and cotton. I see you got a little cotton ball on the shirt right there. So we export quite a bit of cotton. But it's a very fine material. Cayman is actually our number two export customer, and they're headquartered in Macon.
Yep.
And actually, as far as our total exporters, they're like in the top 10. I believe they're number 8 or number 9. Mm-hmm. But very fine clay that's used in putting the shiny gloss on paper. Mm-hmm. It's used in, you know, pigments, you know, to make colors. And it's also used in kaopectate.
That's right.
So it
cures
what ails you. You know?
And I think a lot of folks wouldn't think about all those various applications. But we toured one of their plants down in that area, in the Macon area, and just a great company, great culture, and a lot of hardworking people. That's a tough industry.
It is.
But a big export, clearly.
It is a big export for us. On the export side, again, you know, that's one of the things that makes Savannah such an attractive port for our direct customers. And our direct customers are the ocean carriers. Mm. Cayman, you know, we don't charge them a dime. They are the customers of our customers. They're the customers of the ocean carrier. But if you think of a port kind of like you would think, an ocean carrier like you would think of a trucker, you know, you got to go to Atlanta and you got to come back if you're headquartered here.
Right.
So you want freight going both ways. You want freight on the head haul and the back haul.
Maintain a balance.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Here in Savannah, there's a balance.
Yeah.
You've got kaolin clay. Basically, one of our former executive directors, Doug Marchand, he would say dirt, trees, and chickens. We got a lot of stuff going out. Basic commodities going out.
Yeah.
But you've got imports coming in that are generating empty containers for those export commodities. So you've got commodities going out, products coming back.
That's why they call it the balance of trade. Every country wants to maintain that 50-50 balance.
You got it. And we're real close.
Yeah.
We're really close. And with the economy, you know, being so strong right now, with the dollar being strong, we're seeing that the imports kind of outweigh the exports right now. I think we're right about maybe 60-40 import-export. But back in 2008, you know, it was flipped. You know, I hate to use this pun, but the exports kind of kept us afloat. So it's one of those things. It's great to be at a port that has an abundance of cargo opportunities.
Yes.
For shipment in or out.
So, Stacy, thanks. You have coined our episode name, Dirt, Trees, and Chickens. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Fascinating stuff. I always, despite how much work we do in supply chain, this is exactly why I think this ports thing is so fascinating, because it's a whole different perspective, and the stuff that the products you take for granted, really, you have no idea that the sheer volume that we're shipping out across the world. All right, so let's shift gears and let's talk more imports. And you've touched on that already a little bit, but let's talk about how, you know, your role and how the Georgia Ports Authority is helping work with companies and looking to build more facilities and more suppliers and, you know, more like the Wayfarers, right?
Yep, exactly. And I'll take you back, you know, way back to maybe the late 90s, early 2000s, when we were predominantly an export port. We were very heavily market share on the export side, shipping basically, you know, primary export commodities that we ship today. Okay, so management at that time says we need a strategy. Mm. We're running out of empty containers. Okay, how can we get more empty containers to support the export market? Mm. Our exports were going to Asia. Okay, what's coming back from Asia? Finished goods, retail goods. So we worked with the state of Georgia. We worked back then with the Savannah Economic Development Authority to develop an industrial park, Crossroads, this industrial park. Mm-hmm. And we were able to attract Home Depot. Okay, again, What I'm telling you is this term or this phrase is used in a lot of different business schools that teach logistics. Mm. It's coined the Savannah model, where you attract importers or exporters very close to your port. Okay. And by having those facilities near your port, those ships, the ocean carriers, their ships have propellers. They're going to go where those where their customers tell them to go. So if Home Depot comes in and says, hey, I've got, you know, 300 employees in Savannah, I've got a lease that I'm paying, it's more efficient for us if you put that ship in Savannah versus any of our competing ports, and that's going to drive a ship call. And that's going to generate revenue for the Port Authority because our direct customer is that shipping line. So we were just in, we were fortunate enough that we had the foresight and our leaders at that time had the vision to take advantage of a lot of different things that were going on in the markets at that time. Labor unrest on the West Coast. The fact that we had an abundance of available property within close proximity to the Garden City Terminal. So we took advantage of all those things as they came, and it basically made us into the port that we are today. Okay, on the import side, again, attracting warehouse distribution, attracting Wayfair, attracting, you know, Target, attracting IKEA. And that's a funny story because back then, one of my Doug Marchand, again, my the executive director, he was like, Stacy, you know, I want you to attract, you know, get IKEA in here. I like the business that they're doing. I've been looking at their numbers. You know, they're going to be a big player. And I'm like, I had never even heard of IKEA. And this was, you know, early 2000s. And I did some digging. And, you know, a Swedish company, you know, doing a lot of business with Europe. I was like, huh, how the heck am I going to do this?
I put together a lot of their furniture for my family.
Lo and behold, bring one day, pick up the phone. Hey, Stacy, this is Michael McDonald. I'm with IKEA. I'd like to talk to you about putting a distribution center in Savannah.
Wow.
So that kind of, you know, opened my eyes to what we had built over that time period, over all these years.
Build it, they will come.
So then we started working with, or at least I did, with real estate developers. So you have to have a product here to sell. The Savannah market was hot. You know, we had spec buildings being built, you know, buildings that were built without a specific customer in mind, but in hopes that a customer will come in and lease that facility. So we started working with real estate developers to come in and build buildings, 700,000 square foot buildings, to be able to attract more importers into this area. I think Doug at one time he got up in front of at the State of the Port address and he had a call to action. Over the next 10 years, we predict we're going to need about 10 million square feet in industrial space to, you know, support the growing Georgia Ports Authority. That was the first predictor right there, because when he did that, companies came in, they built, we were started attracting more import freight. More empty containers being, you know, available to us for those export markets, and we were off to the races up until the recession. Recession came, you know, our vacancy rates in this area went from, gosh, about 6-7% up to almost 23%. Now vacancy rates are back down to about 3-4%. So we're doing well.
So before we kind of shift over to some of the supply chain trends that's on your radar more, touch on a little bit more. You kind of addressed some of it, but how else is the GPA helping to drive e-commerce?
Well, we are kind of the tip of the spear. You know, our model did not change with e-commerce. I mean, stuff's got to get, you know, from point A to point B, okay, as far as the port is concerned.
Right.
But what we were seeing was outside the gate with the types of customers that were coming, with the types of retailers that were actually coming to our area. If you look at which retailers, e-commerce and brick and mortar, are around the Port of Savannah, it's basically a who's who. You know, it's anybody and everybody that you could recognize. Well, we recently we've started receiving phone calls and we've started targeting companies that are suppliers to e-commerce. Okay, we're when you order something from Amazon, it does not necessarily come from an Amazon facility.
Right,
it comes from one of their suppliers. So those suppliers are actually building facilities here, and they're growing facilities here in Savannah. They're supplying Amazon, they're supplying e-commerce, and they're supplying those traditional warehouses that serve brick-and-mortar stores. And we've actually attracted several or two, three e-commerce retailers themselves. Mm. If you look up in Bryan County, there's a company that's called Spreetail. Mm. Okay, they are a direct e-commerce retailer.
That's right.
If you look in Savannah River National Trade Park, there's a company called Best Choice Products. If you go to either one of those two companies' warehouses or websites, they look like mini Amazons. Mm. I had never heard of them. So, and that's another part of what I do. I work with the brokerage community, the companies that the retailers are going to saying, I need space in either Charleston, Savannah, or Jacksonville. Mm. So they're working those projects as well. So a lot of these projects are broker-led today. But yeah, we're seeing companies that are serving e-commerce retailers, and we're seeing new e-commerce retailers that are entering the market that mm. will want to compete with Amazon.
Mm. Kind of similar to like Gulfstream when they started the growth and development here, all these other additional suppliers
right.
that supply the chairs, the
you got
fittings,
you got
the furniture of those jets.
Right. Yeah.
Oprah's jet.
For a manufacturing everybody. Facility, that's a good point. That's what yeah. you yeah. want to attract. You want
exactly.
to attract those suppliers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've never thought about that. We're attracting the retailers, and now we're starting to attract the suppliers for those
yeah.
retailers.
From larger ones to smaller
sure.
ones,
yep.
and
different
smaller
tiers.
Ones supply yeah. it. Yeah, it's a win-win for
it is.
Georgia.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It
is.
So, all right, so let's dive into kind of some broader trends there. We think of the supply chain. And you and I were talking about some of the developments in the resins
yes,
side of things.
Yes.
So tell us more about that.
Yes. Resins, plastic pellets, plastic resins, they're a byproduct of the manufacturing of natural gas. Or when mm-hmm. companies are like ExxonMobil, they're making natural gas, the byproduct is plastic pellets. And a lot of those facilities are in the Midwest and middle part of the state.
Mm.
Okay. So what you're seeing is an abundance of these plastic pellets that are being made or produced in the United mm. States, they have to find ports that, again, have empty containers mm. to be able to handle the volume coming in so that it can be exported to companies that are making, you know, products out of these plastic pellets. Again, you got a commodity that's going out
right.
to different countries to be manufactured into a good to come back to the United States.
Some of that could be even Keter furniture
exactly.
based out of Israel.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah. And it could spur an industry of its own because we're seeing lots of industries, lots of companies looking in this area that are plastics intrusion.
Right. Yeah.
You know, suppliers to mm. to the manufacturing process
yeah.
that need
3D design now
right.
what they're doing CAD/CAM applications.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's amazing.
All that stuff. So again, it's our rail connections mm-hmm. here that's making Savannah attractive. We've got, thousands of acres that are available. Most of it is fully entitled. When fully entitled, meaning it's ready to start building mm. on rail because the resins are coming from the Midwest and the middle portion of the country on rail. So you need rail facilities. You need rail capability with dual rail serve sites in most cases. And we have that. And they want to be very close to the terminal, within 20, 25 miles of the terminal facility, to lessen those drayage costs, lessen that haul from mm-hmm. from the port to their warehouse and back, which is very important. And by us being 25 nautical miles up the river, we're very close to land available for development, and we're mm-hmm. very close to I-16, I-95. So we're very, very attractive to a lot of the resins exporters, the resins packagers, that are looking to expand their operations beyond Houston, beyond Mobile, and coming to the East Coast.
Sure. And we got more room. So
we
if
do.
You're a resins player, come on to Savannah
we
or
do.
Brunswick or wherever, right?
We do.
So speaking of Savannah and Brunswick, taking a quick departure, you mentioned about an hour. Is that an hour by highway? Or that's not an hour by how the crow flies, is it?
By highway, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, going from Savannah down to Brunswick is about
that's what
an
I thought.
Hour.
Okay.
Down 95.
Yep.
Yep.
I always like to get a geography lesson. already on, so.
You're from up north.
Yeah. Right? Well, what's funny, Stacey, I'm from Aiken, South Carolina. That's where I grew up. And you know, we only have 46 counties in South Carolina, not 159
yeah,
here in Georgia.
Yeah.
So we did a show up in the upstate at a great engineering research facility.
And I really hadn't looked at a South Carolina map in a while. And we started talking about developments and projects. And, you know, I just assumed I remembered where everything was. Oh, I was getting the east side confused with the west side.
And right.
I left there Googling my map and relearning some of my South Carolina geography. But nevertheless, so let's talk about Coalchain. I know we already kind of touched on a lot of the fascinating aspects of Coalchain. But let's talk more about why that's on your radar here lately.
Again, it's because that's an area that we consider ourselves underserved right now. Again, because of all the poultry exports, you know, we would like to have that become a balanced trade for us as well. We'd like to have more equipment, more of the refrigerated containers within close proximity of the terminal to handle all the exports that are coming out. And, you know, they can be repositioned to Hall County up in north, anywhere up in northeast, northwest Georgia that would need that equipment. So we've got to have that equipment here. And it's good paying freight.
It's
the ocean That's carriers true. Like it. The ports like it. We've invested quite a bit of capital into handling this type of freight. I believe we've set ourselves apart from other ports in the South Atlantic that can handle the freight. And again, it's basically placing an emphasis on that cold chain, making sure that, you know, I've heard Chris Logan mention this, you know, several times that, you know, say coming from Central South America up to the United States, it was optimum for a container to stay cold for 21 days. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that put that optimum sailing time from, say, Central America up to Philadelphia.
Right.
So we had to go in and we had to change some perceptions. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to change the way that a lot of folks thought that, you know, Philadelphia was definitely, you know, that port for cold chain. But if you look in Savannah, you know, what is the biggest growing sector within a retail store, even a convenience store that you see now? It's food.
Right.
Food. You know,
That's
it's
right.
food. You know,
People
Walmart, Walmart, I would even say one of their biggest growing components is the grocery side.
Yes. Sure.
And they are our number one biggest customer on the import side.
Right.
So it makes sense for them to have facilities or refrigerated facilities near where they're, you know, where their total logistics picture is actually originating. So
when I was at Port Fresh, our number one customer was Walmart because they were getting involved in the cold chain and food produce. And
like you said, when you go to the grocery store, when you go to Kroger or Publix and you're in there in January, December, November, and you see a watermelon, it didn't come from South Georgia. It didn't come from Middle Georgia, you know?
A little bit farther away.
Exactly. So think about that. Yeah.
I am looking forward as we're hitting mid-May, the Locust Farmers Market is going to have a lot
of
fresh Georgia produce. And that's one of our so we go down to Monroe, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And that's Walton County, as you mentioned earlier. And they've got a wonderful local farmers market. You can park and walk down Main Street. Like it's Newberry. Three kids love it, so it's kind of like it's been some comfort food for us on Saturday mornings.
Oh, most definitely.
We'll have to take you to Foresight Park here in Savannah.
Let's do it.
On a Saturday.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, yeah.
So you've already touched on, Stacey, and to our listeners, again, we're talking with Stacey Watson, Director of Economic and Industrial Development at the Georgia Ports Authority. Stacey, you've already touched on real estate. I think that's one of the themes throughout what you've shared.
Right.
But what else, what other twist about real estate, what other wrinkle should our listeners might be aware of as it relates to the Georgia Ports Authority?
We don't control the real estate outside of the terminal, but we support their efforts.
Yeah.
You know, we need a certain number of warehouses, distribution facilities outside the terminal to support the activity that goes on in the terminal. So again, that's my role, is to work with the developers, to work with the investors, to convince them that you know, Savannah is the right fit for them. And I you know, Griff's probably gonna kill me with it, but I think I got the best job at the port, you know, the best job in the state, because we've got such a good product to sell.
Right. Yes.
You know, so that makes a huge difference.
They're coming to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So. Yeah. You know, it took a while to build this, but on the real estate side, our biggest challenge is having enough. You know, we there were many months that 2017 that our vacancy rates were less than 1%. You know, so what am I going to go out and sell? You know, I don't have anything.
No inventory.
No inventory. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So over the last 10 years, the Savannah real estate market has grown from like 40 million square feet to like 60 million square feet. One of the fastest growing real estate markets of our size in the United States, which is huge, which is huge.
And another 15 million square feet coming online.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
And there's almost a direct, almost one-to-one correlation between port growth and warehouse need, local warehouse need.
Yeah.
So we don't plan to stay the same size that we are today. Yep. I mean, the terminal today is handling like 4.5 million TEUs, 20-foot equivalent units, 20-foot containers. So the capacity of the facility today is 5.5 million. Mm. So we always have to have that gap between our actual throughput and capacity, or else if they touch, we'll be in big trouble.
That's right.
It'll slow us down to a crawl. So we're almost mandated to have like a 20% gap between demand and capacity. So we plan to grow our capacity up to 8 million TEUs. Okay. So we can almost double our existing throughput on that same footprint, on that same 1,200 acres. So that's going to necessitate a lot of real estate in the future. So that is my biggest challenge. Finding the retailers to come today, right now, the developers are, I mean, this is probably the best time to be in industrial real estate, because 85-90% of the time that, you know, as a building is being built, before it's completely built out, before it has a certificate of occupancy, they have a customer waiting for it to finish. So they couldn't be in a better position right now. They've been in a lot of years. So that's the challenge that I see on the economic development side. On just the general port side, ships are getting bigger. As you know, we're handling the biggest ships that can fit through the Panama Canal right now, the big 14, 15,000 TEU capacity vessels. We handle those on a regular basis, a weekly basis. But we're hearing that they're going to get bigger. So what's next?
Mm.
Okay. It's not necessarily the deep draft. Okay. We're going
raise
down
the
47.
Bridge.
You got it. You got it. So we're working with the Georgia DOT to try to figure out what's next as far as it comes to the air draft, the bridge. But, you know, but that's going to be a problem East Coast, not just Savannah. So.
Right.
That's true.
Lots of other chefs in the kitchen making decisions when we talk about that bridge. All right, so good stuff. So as we kind of move to wrap this segment up here, our third series of the Savannah Business Leadership Series on Supply Chain Radio, you're headed, Stacy, to Canada, the beautiful city of Montreal. And tell us where you're going and why.
Yeah, I'm actually going to Montreal June the 2nd, 3rd, 4th. I'm on a panel on the 3rd with SUSE Canada. And SUSE equals Southeast U.S. That means Southeast U.S. There are 7 Southeast U.S. states that partner together to work with Canada to make sure to match, you know, our goods with their demand and vice versa. So it's basically international marketing, you know, putting customers with buyers, putting buyers with customers. So I'll be on a panel talking about or discussing how we do business with small and medium enterprises. So working on that presentation now as we speak.
Well, you know, I think when we were chatting about this the other day, it's really neat how not just we view the Georgia Ports Authority and what y'all do in the operations and the bottom line results, but but globally you're looked at as like a P&G of your industry, a G of your, you know, folks that set the standard in terms of how operations should be executed.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Right. Yeah, so I see you, when you go up to Montreal, folks are probably wanting to pick your brain you're doing, what you're doing down
most
here,
definitely,
right?
Most definitely, most definitely. And
so don't give it all away.
No, exactly.
we want your back here, Stacy.
There was a time that we did that, but we had to pull back. You know, I was like, hey, nobody gave us a roadmap to get to where we got to. So.
Chick-fil-A doesn't share it.
Exactly.
No.
Got to keep a little
long
bit,
live true Kathy.
A little
I love
bit
them.
Of that secret sauce secret, you know?
That's right. But still, you know, obviously benchmarking is an important thing that goes on across the world of supply chain. And, and appreciate, you know, y'all do a lot of that through your tours. And, and beyond the awareness piece, there's plenty of companies that can learn how to get better and improve certain aspects of their operations by coming out and engaging.
Yeah, and we do that all the time. Even we hear from customers. I mean, I think it's just that Southern hospitality. It's ingrained in us.
Mm, yeah.
You know, we'll get customers or prospects that, you know, just walk up in the front door, and we work with them. We help them.
Yep.
You know, and they're like, wow, we would never get that type of service or that type of, you know, attention.
Really good sweet tea
in such and such
there?
Place yeah. or such and such yeah. place. But no, we're fortunate. You know, I've been there, you know, at the port 27 years,
wow.
and we've always had good forward-thinking, visionary leadership. The right leadership at the right time.
Yeah, love that.
We're a good partner here locally in Savannah. We've got great partners statewide with the state legislature. Again, it's just good to be on a winning team. Great leadership.
Yep. So, Stacy, where can folks to learn more? Where how can they get in touch with either you or the Georgia Ports Authority?
Okay, you can reach me. My email address is very simple. swatson, S-W-A-T-S-O-N, at gaports.com. swatson@gaports.com. Do not hesitate to shoot me an email. I usually get to them about 2 or 3 days, but don't worry. I'll get back to you.
Try to balance inbound
try
outbound
to exactly,
email, right?
Exactly.
Plus some wonderful presentations
yeah,
are at the Georgia Port Authority videos.
Yeah, and we love to show off our port. One of the things that Griff emphasizes is that it is, Griff Lynch, our executive director, is that it's our port. It's not just his port. It's not just Stacy's port. It's not just Chris Logan's port. It is the port for the people of the state of Georgia.
Yes.
And we have no problem. We actually love showing it off. So if you've got a school group or even a church group or a group that's more interested in learning about logistics, learning about what we do.
A wonderful port. Actually, my wife's an artist, and she was saying, our sewing bee ladies want to go on a tour.
Oh,
so
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I may have the Wilmington Island sewing bill.
Listen,
ladies.
Not a problem. You know, make a friend where you can. You
that's
know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
So that's no more true statement. So.
Hey, there's something for everybody.
Yep.
Well, good stuff. Well, Stacy Watson, thanks so much. Stacy, you serve as Director of Economic and Industrial Development at the World Class Georgia Ports Authority. Thanks so much for joining
us today. My pleasure.
Thank you, Stacy. You're world class.
And we may bring you back after Montreal and get some of your key takeaways from
that
Sioux Canada experience. So, all right. So, we're going to wrap up today on a couple of upcoming events right before we conclude. Supply Chain Now Radio is a proud media partner of EFT's 3PL and Supply Chain Summit in Atlanta, June 10th through the 12th. Ton of great speakers. We're going to be broadcasting live there. Thanks to our friends at Becker Logistics. You can check them out at beckerlogistics.com. Check out EFT.com if you want more information. Registration is still open. There's over 800 supply chain executives that have signed up already. If you can't find what you're looking for, you can send us a note to Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at supplychainnowradio.com, and we will get you what you're looking for. The Georgia Manufacturing Summit, October 9th at the Cobb Galleria in Atlanta. A lot of other great speakers
lined up. Coming.
That's right. It's going to be the biggest summit yet. You can learn more at the GeorgiaManufacturingAlliance.com. Again, big thanks to our guests today, Stacy Watson with the Georgia Ports Authority, Bill Stankiewicz, my co-host.
Thank
three
you,
shows
sir.
Today.
It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Breaking
pleasure.
Records. We'll be back down here soon as we continue the Savannah Business Leadership Series on Supply Chain Radio. So with that being said, be sure to check out all of our upcoming events, replays of our interviews, other resources at supplychainnowradio.com. Find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, all the other leading sites where podcasts can be found. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. On behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now Radio team, this is Scott Luton wishing you a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next time on Supply Chain Now Radio.